Madam Secretary, would you kindly take the roll call, please?
This is Senate Natural Resources, March 12, 2021. Vice Chair Small.
Excused.
Vice Chair Flowers.
Here.
Senator Ankeny.
Here.
Senator Brown.
Excused.
Senator Cohenour.
Present.
Senator Gillespie.
Here.
Senator Hoven.
Yes.
Senator Jacobson.
Here.
Senator Lang.
Yes.
Senator Lynch.
Excused.
Senator Pomnikowski.
Here.
Chairman Wellborn.
Here.
You got enough fingers, Mr. Chairman?
I do.
Okay.
Thank you. We've got the order of bills up today on the board. We're going to start with House Bill 173, Representative Logie. Whenever you're ready, sir, go ahead and open on your bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Representative Denley Logie, House District 14, St. Regis, Montana. This is House Bill 173, Fire Hazard Reduction Fund. Last session, there was a bill that came through that changed the structure just slightly on what was taken out on a hazardous reduction agreement. The hazardous reduction agreement basically withholds some money from private timber sales to go back in and clean up the slash, burn the slash. If either the landowner or the contractor can clean that up and they get a refund back on that money they've put in. Or if the contractor does it, he gets the money. But it cleans up the slash, burns it, or grinds it. That way you don't have that future fire danger and the habitat for the animals. You clean up the mess. So that's why this hazardous reduction fee was established. But when it came through last session, there was somebody dropped the ball somewhere along the line, and they were able to collect the money, but they weren't able to get it to spend it. So that's basically what this bill does. There's about $55,000 in the account to spend, and this is basically to just allow that spending. And I do want to say there's a person up in the gallery that is from the mill back home, Idaho Forest Group, and he's one of those that takes out the money from my hazardous reduction, or his mill does. And so I would ask for a due pass, and there is, I think, someone from DNRC online that may give you some information.
All right, Representative Logie, you do realize there's a gentleman sitting on this committee that it's a really bad idea when you point out little pots of money of $55,000 here and there that hasn't been spent yet. You do realize that, right?
Well, Mr. Chair and committee, I know there's a few on the other side that grab it even fast. Funny, it's still there.
he might be dressed, disguised as a coal miner, but he's a pirate, so just keep that in mind.
I know that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
You're welcome. All right, proponent. How many proponents are in the room to this piece of legislation? Two? All right, let's try to, if we could keep it at about 15 minutes for all of the proponents, I think the committee would appreciate that if that works. If we need to go a little in, we can, but thank you, Mr. Elliott. It looks like you're going to lead off, so welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Clayton Elliott, ELLIOTT, here today representing Montana Trout Unlimited, and Ms. Trank and I think can keep it well under 15 minutes today. This is a good bill. It was a project that we supported last session, and the statutory appropriation was just missing. These sorts of projects are often good restoration sorts of projects for trout and for fish. So it's a good bill, and happy to see it moving forward so we can spend that money. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. Further proponents? Ms. Trank, welcome.
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Peggy Trank, spelled T-R-E-N-K, and I appear before you on behalf of the Treasure State Resources Association in support of HB 173. Our membership includes folks in the logging and forest products industry, and those are folks that take their stewardship ethic very seriously. We support this bill because it clears away an unintended barrier to make sure a healthy forest landscape is maintained as envisioned by the folks who put the hazard reduction program in place years ago. So we would appreciate your consideration of this measure and urge a due pass on House Bill 173. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents, please. Further proponents? Seeing none in the room. Heather, I'll just let you bring them into the room one at a time as a, and it looks to me like we have Mr. Arno. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matt Arno, A-R-N-O, and I am the Forestry Assistance Bureau Chief for the Forestry Division at the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. I am here in support of House Bill 173. The bill before you today establishes a statutory appropriated fire hazard reduction fund that would allow DNRC to expend state special revenue to reimburse our costs for slash abatement in cases where hazard reduction agreement or HRA holders do not fulfill their obligation to abate slash resulting from active forest management. Additionally, this account allows the DNRC to reassign HRAs in cases where the HRA holders are unable to abate slash and another party is willing to take over those duties. Statutory appropriation was originally authorized for this fund in the 2011 legislative session and expired in June of 2019. The bill would reauthorize that same spending authority. The Hazard Reduction Agreement, or HRA, program has been in effect for over 30 years and is designed to ensure the proper treatment of logging slash to reduce fire hazard. The HRA program holds contractors accountable to reduce wildfire risk from logging slash following timber harvest and thus benefits landowners by reducing wildfire risk to property owners and communities. Before cutting any timber, individuals and companies must enter into the HRA agreement with the DNRC. A bond of $6 per thousand board feet is collected and held until the slash threat has been abated, and then the bond is refunded to the HRA holder. When the HRA holder does not fulfill their obligation of treating the slash, they forfeit their bond. The bond funds are then transferred to the Fire Hazard Reduction Fund, and the state assumes responsibility for treating the slash. There are two common ways this issue is handled. One is that another individual or company agrees to take on the obligation of treating the slash in exchange for the original bond funds. This is a reassignment, and this is the most common method that these unfulfilled obligations are met. The second way is the DNRC takes on the responsibility for the abatement, and the forfeited funds are then used to pay state employees or private contractors to do the work. In both cases, the bond funds are transferred from the bond account and deposited as revenue into the Fire Hazard Reduction Fund. Assuming DNRC has the spending authority, these expenses are paid out of this account once the work is completed. Without statutory appropriation to expend state special revenue received from the Fire Hazard Reduction Fund, the DNRC would lose the ability to expend the bond funds to complete the work, either through reassignment or having state employees do the work. The state would have to treat the slash using general obligation funds previously appropriated for other forestry programs. In cases where alternative funding is not available, slash may go untreated, creating higher wildfire risk. For those reasons, we are here in support of 173. And I also got a call from Jason Todd Hunter from the MLA, and he wasn't able to make the hearing but wanted me to let the committee know that the MLA supports the bill. And I also got a message from Julia Ultimus from the Montana Wood Products Association saying she could not attend, but they are also in support, and you have her testimony in writing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Arno, and we'll call on you if there are any. So thank you. So with that being said, it looks like there's probably the both of those that he just mentioned are on the list, so I don't believe there's probably any more in the queue. Is that correct?
That would be correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and informational witnesses, it looks like we have a Roger Zisak. Mr. Zisak, are you?
Never ask for opponents.
Sorry.
There won't be any.
Opponents to the bill, please.
Hello?
We'll be right with you, sir. I got a little ahead of myself. So are there any opponents? Seeing none in the room. Nothing on Zoom, I don't believe. Is there, Heather?
Seeing no, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So seeing none, Mr. Zisak, informational witness, would you introduce yourself, please? And then if we have questions, we'll call on you, sir.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you. My name is Roger Zisak. I am the Forest Practices Program Manager and oversee the SLASH program that's pertinent to this bill today, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Questions from the committee? Yep. Senator Hovind, and then Senator Flowers.
Mr. Chairman, for the last gentleman, I didn't catch his name, Mr. Roger from the DNRC.
Mr. Zisak. You're on Zoom, sir. I mean, you're on mute. There you go.
I'm sorry. I'm getting figured out here.
That's okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to our world.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Zisak, how long does it take from the time that the logging occurs till the time that the slash is dry enough to be burned?
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, that certainly can vary, but generally if the logging is accomplished in, let's say, the spring, then generally by the fall burning season, it's able to be burned. So let's say 6 months or so.
Just to follow up. So the company that did the logging may have come and be long gone by the time that the slash is dry enough to burn. And I understand that's the reason for the bonding. So is it the expectation that the logging company will come back and do it, or do we just kind of assume they won't, and that's we're going to utilize the bond to hire someone to burn it?
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, the hazard reduction agreement that's being referred to here is essentially a contract between the DNRC and the person or entity that is taking responsibility for treating that slash. And it could be the logger, it could be the landowner, or it could be a mill, for example, that kind of thing. But the understanding is that, yes, they agree to take on that responsibility, and they will return and burn that slash when it's able to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Flowers, you've got your hand up. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I have a question for Mr. Arno.
Mr. Arno?
Mr. Chair, Senator Flowers. Mr. Chair, Mr. Arno, was the previous statutory authority under a sunset clause, or how did it expire? Because I know this is just an ongoing program. What happened there? I'm just curious, just to make sure we're not setting ourselves up for something similar in the future.
Mr. Chair, Senator Flowers, that is correct. It previously had a sunset, and we missed that somehow. Somebody missed that. So we're back here asking you to renew this.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Follow-up.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Arno, as I read it now, there is not a sunset in there. Is that correct, or did I miss it in the new bill?
Read it. Mr. Chair, Senator Flowers, you are correct. This one does not have a sunset.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Arno.
Thank you. Senator Ankeny.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor.
Senator Representative Logie.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if the landowner accepts responsibility, is that bond released until he takes care of the slash?
Mr. Chair and Senator, the way it works, and this gets back to Senator Hovind's question as well, I have done it both ways. I've been the logger myself in my younger thinner years, and lately I've had the logger come in and do it, and the logger has taken on the agreement. Prior to that, I took on the agreement. I burned the slash when I felt it was ready to burn clean enough, and then I would submit the request for the money to come back to me that was taken out in the slash agreement. And with the logger coming in, they accept that responsibility, decide when they want to clean the brush. If it does not get done, if they leave, if for some reason they skip out on the contract, that's what this money will come back in, and DNRC can hire somebody to clean up that slash so we don't have that mess left behind, and that's why it's drawn out. Generally, it would be the logger, whether it's the private individual or the logger, that would accept that responsibility and take care of it. And like I say, when you submit your request for the money, it comes to you once they inspect and say the slash removal is approved.
Thank you.
Senator Gillespie.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Senator Chair, Representative Logie. Seems like the logger or the landowner probably would stand the best chance of being able to do it as economically as possible. If the DNRC does get stuck with it, is the money in the pot large enough to have them be able to go out and contract this stuff out, I would assume, right?
Mr. Chair and Senator, that was one of the reasons the bill came last session, was to put just a little bit more in the pot to cover that. But you might ask Mr. Arno, but the way it has worked out, they believe they have enough laid away to clean up the mess, and that's the way the program was set up, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, maybe a follow-up to Mr. Arno just to get his opinion.
Mr. Arno.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Arno, does that sound logical? Is that kind of the way it works then?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, that's correct. That is the way that it works.
Yeah, and that is sufficient then. You don't get left holding the bill, I guess.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator, that is correct. We have not had situations where we do not have enough funding to cover this, as far as I'm aware, in the recent past.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, Representative Logie, would you like to close on your bill?
Mr. Chair and committee, it's a simple bill, of course, like they always say, but I think the idea that nobody's asking for any money, that came before, but just to be able to spend what came in to clean up that mess. So it's a simple green from you all, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Logie.
And have a good weekend.
Representative Logie, do you have a sponsor in mind to carry this to the floor? Should it make it through this committee?
I don't, and if someone wants to, Senator Lang has volunteered.
Senator Lang will be the floor sponsor then. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Have a good rest of your day. All right. This brings to a close House Bill 173. Next is House Bill 131. Representative Beattie, welcome, sir. This opens on House Bill 131.
Thank you, Chairman Wilburn and members of this committee. For the record, my name is David Beattie, representative of House District 86, which is comprised of Hamilton and the immediately surrounding area. This afternoon, I bring for your consideration House Bill 131, which seeks to allow a person having a cabin lease on state water project land the opportunity to purchase that cabin site. A total of 25 cabin sites might be sold, 16 around Painted Rocks Reservoir, which is at the headwaters of the Bitterroot River, and 9 around the Tongue River Reservoir. Only those sites that would not adversely affect expansion of the water project will be allowed to participate in the program, and per the bill, the DNRC has until the 1st of January 2022 to determine which sites would be eligible for the program. First, a bit of background. Currently, the cabin and home site sale program, which the legislature passed into law in 2013 with bipartisan support, allows lessees of cabin sites on state trust land the option of voluntarily purchasing their sites through an auction process. This program is limited to sites on state trust land. although it does not appear that the legislature's intent was to exclude water project cabin sites. Between 2014 and 2020, approximately 20% of the cabin sites on trust lands have been sold. The balance are still being leased. House Bill 131 does not reinvent the wheel. The proposed sales process that you find in the bill is drawn from the same process that has been successfully used since 2014 for sales of cabin sites on trust land. I want to emphasize, though, that participation in the program is voluntarily. A lessee need not participate. House Bill 131 affords lessees on cabin sites on water project land the same opportunity as has been afforded those with cabin sites on state trust land. I ask you to take favorable action on this bill. Thank you, Chairman Wilburn. This concludes my opening statement.
Thank you, Representative Beatty. Proponents to the bill, please. Welcome, sir. Please state your name and spell it your last for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman and fellow members. My name is Del Reynolds, D-E-L-R-E-Y-N-O-L-D-S. My wife and I are leaseholders at Painted Rocks Reservoir, cabin number 12. I wanted to give you a brief history, and you said you wanted everything short today, so I'll do my best to hurry. There are 16 cabins. These cabins are located on Painted Rocks Reservoir, which is approximately 25 miles from the intersection of U.S. Highway 93 and 467. These cabins were erected after the reservoir project was completed in 1939. There were more than 16 cabins in the beginning, but some of the spaces have dilapidated and they're now no longer existing. Most lots are one-third to one-half acre or smaller. 14 cabin sites have electricity, 6 have water and sewer, and 2 cabins can only be reached by watercraft at full pool. They are remote. They have no services. 14 cabins are accessible by road, 10 cabins by 467, which continues on into Idaho around the east side of Painted Rocks Reservoir. 4 cabins are accessible by crossing Painted Rocks Dam and going by Forest Service Road along the western edge of Painted Rocks Reservoir. Again, these lots were developed by cabin owners. Most cabin owners are the same families that owned them in an origin. There's been some turnover, but they are generational. The first two were erected in 1940, and every other year, 1945, 62, 59, a cabin was built. These cabins are in wooded areas. Some of them are on the edge of the lake, or reservoir, excuse me, and continue to be occupied seasonally. The lake is at full pool around May 1st, and then emptied to satisfy Trout Unlimited and local irrigation concerns downriver. In retrospect, Canyon Ferry cabin leases that are right outside the window here were started in 1958. In 1998, Title 10 Public Law 105-277, 265 cabin sites were able to become private owned. In 1998 also, Dead Man's Reservoir, another water project site, which had 47 cabins, the present governor then, Rothko, and the DNRC and the cabin owners reached an agreement outside of legislation, and with a quick claim, they became owners of their cabin under a corporate type situation. We are the last cabins that were not recognized in the Senate Bill 369 that passed. And I want to read why this law was passed. Whereas implementation of the state cabin leasing laws have become dysfunctional, and those laws have become subject to continuous and unproductive litigation. And that is the reason that I'm a proponent for this law. We'd like to have this matter cleared up, and I hope that you will give us our support. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Roylene Gall. That's R-O-Y-L-E-N-E-G-A-U-L. And the secretary was nice enough to print my letter for all of you, so I'm not going to read it verbatim. But I do want to hit some high points of why I am a proponent for this bill. I am a cabin owner. My husband and I, we acquired from my parents their cabin, and I've raised my children and my grandchildren on the lake and in the cabin. What I think is extremely important for the committee to know is that I'm one of the fortunate ones. I have electricity. I have a sewer system. I have a septic system. I have flushing toilets. I have a shower. We have washers and dryers. We have a hard-line phone in there. This is not a facility or a cabin or camper that you can simply hook up and move off of state lands. It's there. It's permanent. My cabin encumbers a lot that's 55 by 85. That's 55 feet by 85 feet. That's less than a tenth of an acre. It's not going to be easily removed. What I think people need to know is the reason I'm such a proponent for this, even though I just retired out of 38 years of being a lands forester, where I acquired lands for the public lands. I was a public land acquisition manager for the Bitterroot and the Lolo National Forest. But in this case, these state lands are encumbered. They're encumbered by my house, by my cabin or house, as the children call it. The lot doesn't go all the way to the lakefront. That you need to know. The lot stops well in front of the lake. The public, recreating public, can still get to the lake. They still meet us around. The recreating public still meets us around the campfire at night. We encourage them. Lots of the young teenagers that get stuck in the lake or need the phone come in and use the phone to call their tow trucks or whatever. But I don't invite them into the house to use the bedroom and sleep in my beds. So that makes it a little different than the recreating public having access to state lands at all times. That being said, the other real reason I'm a proponent is that as our government changes, I never know from year to year, is the new permit administrator going to like the color of my siding? Is he going to make me change my metal roof? Does he like the way the patio is built? What changes is each administrator going to put upon me as a cabin owner? I want my cabin to be on private land so that I have the opportunity for my children to have it into the future. Another important part that many of you have heard through the years is the cabin fees. I compare my fee to paying taxes. As a private landowner, I'm going to continue paying. I'm going to pay taxes on it. That's the way it goes. You're going to pay taxes. It's going to go into the local county government. It's going to help maintain that road going to the cabins. It's going to help for fire protection up there. It's going to help for those entities that the county dollars and funds are used for. And I think that's a real key point that we need to remember, that people live in those cabins and they need to be participating in the local county government. As a private landowner, I feel that private individuals take better care of the land also. Now, that being said, I rake my lawn, I take care of the hazard trees, I pick up the trash. I'm often asked, why do you pick up the public recreating public's trash? Because that's the right thing to do. And I truly feel that if the cabin owners in our lots owned their land, they would take better care of the land also. That being said, you've got the testimony in my letter, and I'll let you all read it. And thank you for this afternoon.
Thank you, Ms. Gull. Further proponents, please. Further proponents? Seeing none in the room, it looks like we have one on Zoom, Ms. Bonnie Connor.
Let's see, I have to unmute. Can you hear me now?
There we go. Yes, ma'am. Welcome.
Okay.
State your name.
Bonnie Connor. Thank you for having me here. We have cabin number 5 above the road on Blue Joint Road. Our cabin has been in the Connor family since 1955, when my husband's uncle Wesley Connor was an engineer for the Forest Service, and he surveyed the west side of the dam for construction of the road on that side, and he picked out a cabin site. I have a copy of that survey that we found in one of the cupboards at the cabin. It shows the plans for the road, a new bridge over the dam, and reconstruction of the spillway. It also shows survey markings for the original 7 cabin sites on that side of the dam. Now there are only 4. The survey was done in 1955, and the stamp date of approval on it is in June of 1956. It shows the original bridge and all the blueprints for the new one. I also have a copy of a survey that was done in 1978 for the purpose of establishing the boundaries of federal and state lands. I thought this might be of interest to the people who in DNRC. Our cabin was built in sections over the years and finished in 1966 with the addition of a large deck and a bathroom. We have electricity, running water that's piped from the lake. We have a
septic system
and a landline telephone. Even though we live 300 miles away in Big Timber, some of our family enjoys spending time there on weekends. Since I'm retired, I go there 4 or 5 times in the summer and spend several weeks up there. We inherited the cabin in 1991, and until 2006, the rental fee on the lease was only $166 each year for the 10-year lease. In 2007, a new appraisal was done on the 17 cabins on state lands, and the lease rate was adjusted on a sliding scale. Our property was valued at $45,500 and was one that was used to determine the new rates. This year we paid $2,550 for our lease, and each new lease comes with new restrictions. This last lease issue in 2018 was accompanied by a letter that stated that the lease would not be renewed after 2028 because they were going to work on the dam. And a new stipulation was put in that each year we are required to show proof of liability insurance, listing the state of Montana as an additional insurer on the policy. Of course, that raised the price of the policy. We are also required to get permission each time we want to make an improvement or cut a tree, even if they are endangering the cabin. Right now, our deck needs a lot of repair, and I would like to do major work to make it safer and improve its look. I'm reluctant to put time and money into it if we're not going to be able to renew our lease. So, for these reasons, and because the cabin at Painted Rocks is a place that has a lot of history and meaning to our family, we would like to be able to purchase the land rather than lease or lose it. I want to remind you that this, when the new appraisal is done, this is for the land only. We have already put money into the house. We own the house and anything that is improved on the grounds. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Connor. Seeing no further proponents on the list, Heather, do you have any further proponents on your sheet for House Bill 131?
I do not, Mr. Chairman.
How about opponents to the bill? Seeing none in the room, I don't show any on the sheet. Is that a accurate assessment?
That is correct.
Thank you. And informational witnesses. Mr. Halling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Halling. That's H-O-L-L-I-N-G. I am the Bureau Chief of the State Water Projects Bureau at the DNRC, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. Questions from our committee. Senator Cohenour.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and this is a question for Mr. Halling.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Holling. And I would direct your attention to page 3 of the fiscal note. And there is some discussion on there about the work that's being done on the reservoir storage and the increases to the water storage. Can you talk about what would happen if these lands that are proposed to be sold, what would happen to them if the storage increased in the reservoir?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, so right now we have some limited information to determine which cabins may be inundated by a reservoir increase. And so that's one of the things we need to look at for storage increase. And we worked with the bill sponsor to add some additional time for the cabin site sales to allow us to prepare a little more refined study on there to determine which, if any, of the cabin sites may not be available for sale.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so according to this, the way I read it initially, is there somewhere in the bill, it basically says they shall make available for sale on line 11 on the first page. So you can deny the sale if it's going to infringe on the storage increase?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's correct. I believe that the bill sponsor added language in there that would allow us to determine if a cabin site would be inundated. And the reason for that would be if we did a storage increase, that we would not want to have to buy back a piece of property that we just sold. So this allows us appropriate amount of time to determine if a cabin site would be impacted.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Holling, just one last thing. I did want to check on, because I know in the bill that came through before on the state trust lands that there was a necessity that public access be maintained and to access the water. Is that going to remain the same even if the sale goes through, that there would still be access?
Chairman, Senator, I believe that that is the case, that easements will be allowed for both public access through properties and then also for the cabin site owners to have access across state lands if necessary to get to their cabins.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Ankeny. You had a question?
No, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering the same thing that Senator there was. We have, over the last two sessions, dumped quite a bit of money into the DNRC for raising that reservoir, but it seems they've addressed that.
Okay, thank you. Senator Bob Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe a question for Mr. Holling.
Thank you. Mr. Holling.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Holling, and forgive me if this has been covered already, but I was just out of the room for a bit here. But now, is this sale work similar to other state leases? You know, we've been selling a bunch of them along the Thompson River and in those areas, state land. That so, if these are put up for sale, they go to the highest bidder, and then the highest bidder has to make restitution to the somebody if they own the buildings on there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's correct. I believe the bill sponsor modeled it identical to the trust lands bill that was passed previously.
So then one follow-up.
Follow-up.
So then I guess my question is do the people that are asking for this sale understand that they're running they have the risk of actually losing this cabin to a higher bidder if it does go out to sale?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I don't think I can accurately answer that. I'm not certain what the cabin owners understand about the bill.
Could I redirect that to the bill sponsor, please?
Redirect to the sponsor, please.
Chairman Wellburn, Senator Brown. Yes, I think I am confident that the cabin owners that are present here that I've spoken to understand the risk they take. They also understand that they have no obligation. Also, in the, within the bill, they can withdraw from the process prior to the auction if they start seeing things line up in a way that seems problematic to them. And I would just like to reemphasize what Mr. Holland said. The sales process in here is drawn directly from the current process used for state trust land. Didn't invent any new processes here. It seems to work for state trust land, and those folks with those cabin sites run the same risk too if they go to auction.
Thank you. Then one more follow up for Mr. Holland, I think.
Follow up.
Mr. Chairman?
And I ask this question because I really am kind of confused on how they assess the value of those buildings. Are those based on appraisals done on each building? Just to be completely honest, I was looking at a lease on the Thompson River, and it's a cabin that had been abandoned for many, many years. It's got... It had been dubbed the rat trap cabin because it was full of rats, and I mean it's fallen down and it's a real mess, but they still deemed that property value to be almost $20,000 on something that was completely uninhabitable. How are those values of that property determined?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, The current appraisals are based strictly on the lots, so the property. When we do appraisals for cabin site leases, we do not enter or appraise the cabin. For this proposed legislation, there will be an appraisal process that will do both. It will value the property and it will value the improvements so that when the DNRC, if cabin site becomes available, the DNRC would sell the cabin site, and if the current leaseholder is not a high bidder, then the person who's bidding on that would then be required to use the appraisal cost to purchase the cabin from the cabin owner.
So then just one more follow-up, if you don't mind. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, but so then my other follow-up is the appraisal of the buildings. I know that I've had appraisals done on my house before, and I can, you know, for loan purposes, you can, I guess for lack of better words, kind of tell the appraiser this is kind of where we need to come in at for the loan that we have, and he can make it do that. How do we assure that we're getting fair appraisals? I think it really runs for both sides of this agreement. You know, whether you be somebody that's purchasing a cabin that somebody owns, or you're the owner of the cabin, how do we assure that actually is a fair value, and not either deflated or inflated?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, so in the proposed bill, and I believe the way it works for trust lands is that two or more appraisers are selected for potential appraisal, and then the DNRC allows the cabin site owner to agree or pick one of those two. So there's a mutual agreement that that will hopefully have an unbiased appraiser on there. The benefit of the current system is that because there's it's a proposed sale, there's no sale price on it. There would be an auction for the property, and then there would have to be a pretty robust and unbiased appraisal from an appraiser.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hoven.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Hollings, I believe, yes. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hollings, the way I'm reading this on page 2, it says the lessee of the cabin or home site nominated for sale has a preference to match the high bid. If the lessee matches the high bid, bidding is reopened to all bidders. So someone from out of state or someone with lots of money can come in here and just run the bid up and buy it away from someone that's been there for 50, 60 years. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I believe that's a correct potential. Again, the bill sponsor did basically make the bill nearly identical to the trust lands version of the bill that came out earlier.
Mr. Chairman, a follow-up for the bill sponsor?
You bet. Representative Beatty.
Chairman Wellborn, Senator Hoven.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Beatty, how would you feel about putting in there a maximum of 175% or 150% of the appraised value of the lot if the bidding went to that point that the owner of the land that had been there for 50 or 60 years and been in the family for that long would have the opportunity to buy it at, say, 150% of the appraised value? State's getting a fair deal on that.
Senator Wellborn, Chairman Wellborn, Senator Hoven. You know, I've found that this particular section of the current law for trust lands to be problematic. I think the one problem we run into is we're to receive the, quote, full market value of the property. I would certainly be happy to see an amendment such as as you are suggesting right now placed on this to put some limit on this. I would suggest, though, that we may have to check to see whether there's some sort of a requirement that we achieve full market value and how that's defined in law. And the other thing I would suggest also, if we do find a way to put a limit to, the opportunity for big money to outbid current owners, that we go back and look at trust lands. I couldn't do that within the context of this particular bill because of the bill title.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Beatty.
Thank you, and Senator Hoven, I see Mr. Moore taking copious notes, so I think he's probably going to drill down the way he would need to work with you on an amendment if you choose to go that route, sir. So any other questions? Senator Gillespie, we got another hearing right behind this one, so make it quick,
okay.
Please.
I'll be quick, Mr. Chair. I'll call on Mr. Reynolds. I think he maybe had something to add to the equation a minute ago, but maybe not. Okay.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I just wanted to give you a chance to add to the equation if you could, but I guess if we can all be brief, why?
Succinctly,
we'll keep
please,
the
sir.
Chair happy.
I'll keep it short. I'm looking at a page that I printed off the internet. There is a summary of cabin home sales sold that is required by the DNRC to be published, I think. Mr. Halling can correct me on that. And I follow this quite closely because once I learned that 389 a couple of years ago didn't include us, I did a lot of research online and found many interesting things. One of them was that 99.9% of all cabin sales under the state lease law, 389, were original owner purchases. The 0.1% that wasn't a purchase was vacant land that had been abandoned by former cabin holders. So as of this paper that I hold in my hand, it says the grand total of 112 sites sold where all the land went to the schools, MSU, common schools, public buildings, Montana Tech, Pine Hills, totaled $14,158,350. All these sales, again, 99.9%, were initiated by a letter received sent by the DNRC to participate in a bidding and post bond to go through the process. They're published in the local papers. I watch them in Missoula, the Missoulian. I assume the same thing would happen. And I know there was a lot of talk here in the last few moments about someone with lots of money. Unless they were acutely aware of this situation occurring, they would not be participating. That's my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, Representative Beatty, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Chairman Wilburn, for a great hearing. I'll keep this very brief, knowing which day of the week it is, and also from the proponents, you see the close connection these folks have had to the land for years and years. What we're proposing here is a proven way to that has worked for selling state land to cabin site holders, and I think that it's only fair that we afford this opportunity to people that have kind of fell through a loophole since other cabin sites, state land cabin sites, have been allowed up for sale. Despite the history heretofore concerning who actually buys cabins, if Senator Wilburn is able to come up with an amendment, which I would be happy to work with him on, that limits this auction process, things are changing in Montana and things are changing in some of these areas. I would like to have some protection for the families that have invested so much of their lives into the lands that that they are taking care of. And frankly, taken care of on behalf of all of us. And with that, thank you, Chairman Wilburn.
Thank you, Representative. Do you have a floor sponsor in mind, sir?
Chairman Wilburn, I don't. I would be happy to have any one of the senators here carry the bill.
We'll find somebody for you, sir.
Thank you.
Should the opportunity present itself. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this brings to a close House Bill 131. And thanks, folks, for driving all the way over and sharing your personal stories with the committee. Safe travels going home. All right, that brings to a close House Bill 131. Next on the agenda today is House Bill 554, and we'll let the sponsor and his entourage make their way into the room. Representative Kazmaier, welcome. This opens on House Bill 554. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. I'm Representative Kazmaier. I represent House District 27. It takes in Scioto County, Cascade County, Hill County, and Liberty County. Today, I bring before you House Bill 554. What this bill does is it allows the Montana legislature to provide a vote on the behalf of the Montana people for proposed designations within the state. Why this is important, these national heritage areas are managed and controlled by private, unelected, unaccountable boards and will interfere with state and private property rights. In allowing this, will have accountability to our citizens. And with that, I'll let the proponents and opponents speak. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. And before we get started, we've got a pretty full docket of opponents and proponents. Would it be fair to ask each side to keep it to about a half hour total? Could we do that? All right. Welcome, Ms. Honeycutt.
Hello. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Rayleigh Honeycutt, H-O-N-E-Y-C-U-T-T, here representing the Montana Stock Growers Association, Montana Cattle Women's, and the Montana Association of State Grazing Districts. We would like to first start by thanking the sponsor for working with us and agreeing to work with our organization to bring forward this bill. Federal designations have impacted citizens of Montana for decades, and as a result, impacted private property. Our intent when working with the bill sponsor was to bring forward help to the private property owners who may have undue harm with National Heritage Area and Trail designations. Specific to this bill, we are asking that the state legislature vote on proposed designations when they occur outside of federal lands in the state of Montana. It is important for us to note and make clear that our organization does not intend to block designations from occurring within Montana, but to give citizens an avenue to voice their support and concerns to a body that represents them and is elected by the people. In many cases, National Heritage Area and Trail designations encompass primarily private land. Currently, there are 55 heritage area designations around the country. None are in Montana. So in closing, I just want to remind you, instead of having designations managed by self-appointed, private, unelected, unaccountable entities, we are looking to you, the legislature, to be a part of the solution. This bill will allow you to be the ultimate local endorsement when the National Park Service looks at local support. If citizens support or oppose future designations, you are the body that represents their voice. In addition to my testimony, Mr. Chair, if it's okay, I would like to also submit for the record testimony from Cascade County Commissioner Jim Larson, who was unable to be here today. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Dana Darlington, D-A-R-L-I-N-G-T-O-N. I'm from Big Sandy. I'm a fourth-generation farmer-rancher. I'm also one of the North Central directors for the Montana Stock Growers Association. I am here today to speak in support of House Bill 554. I believe this bill would provide the voice needed to protect all affected by the Big Sky Country National Heritage Area proposal to seek federal funding to include private, state, and federal property in their proposal. I have served on many different boards and also on the BLM RAC in the last 20 years. I have attended meetings in Fort Benton 5 years ago to learn more about what a National Heritage Area is and what this self-appointed board was proposing. I first learned that originally they wanted half of Lewis and Clark County, all of Cascade County, all of Shoto County, portions of Fergus, Phillips, and Blaine. After meeting with some opposition a few years later, their proposal now is all of Cascade County and half of Shoto County, totaling 1.7 million acres. Montana Stock Growers Association and several other organizations with a large base of voting members have all voted to oppose such a designation, along with city councils of Belt and Cascade and several county commissioners. Less than 2% of the affected property owners in Cascade and Shoto County even know of this proposal, of this proposed NHA existence or what it entails. After having 10,000 deeded acres of a family ranch thrust into a national monument with a stroke of a pen on President Clinton's last day in office in an area which was already protected under a federal wild and scenic designation, the thought of having another federal designation in the area raised a lot of red flags with me and several others. The fear of the unknown is truly why so many are concerned. While supporters of NHA areas say it does not affect private property, I simply cannot see how it cannot. When the funding for these NHAs comes from the National Park Service in the name of promoting tourism, as we all know, the state of Montana already has a tourism board, and the local towns promote their own local historic, cultural, and natural resources. We do not need a non-elected board to make decisions for communities that did not ask for their input. If this NHA were to become a reality, there certainly will be private property issues, trespassing issues, and a continuing financial strain on taxpayers of the United States. It will also affect land values, not to mention what could change in the use of state and federal land included in the NHA. This appears to be a land grab with the promise of tourism dollars at the expense of private property owners, no matter if they own a house on a lot in town or a farm or ranch. Mr. Chairman, committee members, I thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Garlington. Further proponents, please. Welcome, Mr. Bandel.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and other committee members. For the record, my name is Jess Bandel. That's B as in boy, A-N-D-E-L. I'm a fifth-generation farmer, landowner in Shoto County. I am a member of the Montana Farm Bureau Federation, and I currently serve Shoto County members as the president of the Shoto County Farm Bureau Federation. Obviously, we're here today a little bit because of the Big Sky Country National Heritage Area proposed. I support this bill in front of you, 554. This bill will allow you as the Montana legislature to support landowners in the state by requiring local approval of any said heritage area. This will increase private property rights, protections, and promote grassroots engagements through our elected officials, like we're doing here today. I have elections to face just as a county president. You obviously have elections to face just as senators of our great state. This National Heritage Area Board does not have anyone to answer to, except for the Secretary of the Interior. That office is not accessible and does not provide needed accountability and transparency to local landowners. The Heritage Area, like I said, is the Board of Directors is self-appointed. They will have the ability to influence zoning, planning, permitting processes across its jurisdiction. No stated restrictions to their opinions, no public comment period, no appeals process, no even access to them. Say they rule against me in a project that I have on my own land, even if that project has passed all other government requirements, restrictions, which, as you probably know, can sometimes be extensive. In their feasibility study, they say that they would work and seek out community partners. As a county agricultural leader, I believe maybe I should have been one of their logical points of outreach if they were actually trying to fulfill their own statements of outreach. They have not. I do not believe that the Heritage Area is necessary in any form. If they would like to raise private money without taxpayer funding to accomplish any of their goals, that would be their own rights. But when they're using my money and your money as taxpayers to possibly suppress private property rights, it's just wrong. This bill is one step towards local accountability and stopping a slippery slope of overreach. I urge you to approve this bill and help protect Montana's private property rights. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Jess. Further proponents, please.
Mr. Chair, fellow senators, thank you for the opportunity to address the board. My name is Ross Butcher, B-U-T-C-H-E-R. I'm a Fergus County Commissioner. I'm also the chair of the Montana Natural Resource Coalition, and I'm asking you to support this legislation. It's very important. 5-6 years ago, this idea came forth to the commissioners in Fergus County. We looked at it, and fortunately, we had some insight into heritage areas and what they amount to. And so we brought that to our constituents. We talked about it, and they were not interested in it. So we sent a letter off to the group organizing it, said we weren't interested. We also notified our surrounding counties and said, I think you should look at this because it's a problem. The heritage area folks wanted to have a meeting. We went ahead and put a meeting on in Winifred. We had elected folks from Phillips County and Blaine County also attended that meeting. And it was a rousing, we're not interested in this. We don't need more designations. The monument was enough. And so they removed those counties. Now the problem here is that those other counties didn't have somebody step up, bring the attention to the citizens to understand what was going on. And so it's gotten to this point where you see this far down the road, this unelected organization has put together this package. And now when the local folks in Cascade County and Choteau County really become aware of it and they stand up to try to oppose it, they're in a tough situation. And that's why it needs to come before the state legislature. You're the body that vets these kind of issues for the state. And it's very important that the state of Montana, the citizens of Montana, have that kind of oversight. And that puts a lot of puts a lot of concern on the local government or the local folks if they don't believe they have somebody looking out for their interests if it's going clear back to D.C. So I would urge you to support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butcher. Further proponents?
Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Mr. Flatiger.
Members of the committee, my name is Sean Flatiger. Last name spelled F-L-A-D-A-G-E-R. I'm coming in today as a proud resident from Great Falls, Montana, and a proud son from Northeast Montana in Peerless. I'm also a private property owner in Great Falls and in Daniels County. And I'm not against heritage areas, national heritage areas, and I'm not against national historic trails. However, I am against a designation of such areas without proper checks and balances for the private property owners. And as you've heard some testimony previously, that is the danger that is in place with a national heritage area right now. This is a bill that will provide those needed checks and balances for such designations. I've spoken to many friends and peers in my area where I live and around the areas of Cascade County, around Choteau County, that are very concerned about this. And so this is why they're turning to their local representation. I sympathize with their concerns, and I support this bill, and I ask for your support as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Welcome.
For the record, my name is Rachel Cone, C-O-N-E, and I'm here on behalf of the Montana Farm Bureau Federation. You've already heard a member of ours speak and share his support and his compelling story for an argument for a yes vote. So with that, in the interest of time, I would just like to offer the support of the rest of our organization for a bill that will add a good protection for private property rights.
Thanks, Ms. Cone. Further proponents, please. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the Committee on Natural Resources. For the record, my name is Mitch Conan, K-O-N-E-N. I stand before you representing over 5.5 million acres of cropland in the state of Montana as the president of Montana Grain Growers Association. We rise in support of House Bill 554, requiring state legislative approval of national heritage areas and national trails in Montana. We oppose any designation by the United States Congress of any private property into what is named national heritage and national historic trails. National heritage areas are managed by non-elected groups under the auspices of the National Park Service. If these national heritage areas can be formed nationally, where and what happens to free enterprise within these areas? Private property rights are jeopardized. Control of our land, resources, and decision-making locally are jeopardized. Unelected regional management is nothing more than a land grab initiative, jeopardizing the private property rights of individuals and states. The only way to ensure government does not abuse its power is to not grant that power in the first place. Therefore, we rise in support of this House Bill 554, requiring a state legislative approval of any national heritage area and national trails in Montana for the protection of Montana property rights, and ask for a due pass.
Thank you, Mr. Conan.
With that, I also have a copy.
You can hand that in. You can pass that down to the committee secretary, and she'll get it entered into the record. Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Wiggers.
Good afternoon. Rhonda Wiggers, W-I-G-G-E-R-S, and today I'm in front of you on behalf of the Gorgon Falls Home Builders Association. When I'm not up here with you guys, I do their land use planning and their work with the planning board locally on behalf of the Great Falls Home Builders. They advocate for private property rights. They represent 180 Cascade County businesses and over 4,000 employees, and they're standing before you today in support of House Bill 554. We've joined with other organizations in the area in opposition to this National Heritage designation, but there's a reason for this. This is real. Serving with them on the, I've been doing the zoning for them and the realtors in Great Falls for almost 20 years and working on it. And this really does cause a problem when we get ready to do our zoning or land use planning locally. Previous federal designations in Cascade County have been used to influence both our local land use regulations and some of our federal funding. It is very probable that this designation would also be used to hinder badly needed economic development in Cascade County. These designations should have Montana legislative oversight. There should be somewhere with public hearings and public input before these move forward. And for those reasons, we would ask that you concur on House Bill 554.
Thank you. Further proponents? Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Committee on Natural Resources. My name is Frank Gernoeg, and Frank is F-R-A-N-C-K, and my last name, Gernoeg, G-R-O-E-N-E-W-E-G. I'm a farmer from Three Forks and also a director on the Montana Grain Growers Association. I'm here today in support of House Bill 554. It's paramount that our property rights not be encroached any further. My farm is close to the headwaters of the Missouri River, and as you can well imagine, with the Lewis and Clark and different things, anything could happen where somebody could or a group want to put designation, and I'm opposed to that, without, especially when such an organization have very little accountability or unelected. So I do not support that type of encroachment on our property rights. I believe it hinders our family's ability to conduct business, and especially with little to no consultation. Again, as a farmer and director of MGGA, I stand in support of House Bill 554, and I encourage you to do so as well.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Welcome.
My name is Krista Lee Evans. I'm here today on behalf of AGGI, the Association of Gallatin Agricultural Irrigators, the Montana Grain Elevators Association, as well as Mr. Murphy asked me to express the support of the Montana Water Resources Association. I think the biggest difference, not really different, but a new point that I can raise that you haven't already heard is primarily from my irrigators in the Gallatin. We're facing extreme pressure from increased development and changes to our land use patterns and challenges to us as agricultural producers in the Gallatin Valley. Anything that encroaches on that and makes that even more difficult, especially without our opportunity to be fully involved and provide input, is very concerning. Private property rights matter in Montana. They always have and they always will. And we hope that you will agree and support House Bill 554. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Evans.
Me again.
Ms. Trank, welcome back.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Peggy Trank, spelled T-R-E-N-K, again on behalf of the Treasure State Resources Association in support of House Bill 554. You've already heard from a number of folks who are members of our organization, so I won't repeat any of the things they said other than to me too concerns about property rights. But maybe I'll just share that for me this situation is reminiscent of many years ago I was working for our congressman when the first maps floated out of the Upper Missouri River monument designation and the sort of shock when you saw the overlay of that monument designation over the amount of private land that was included in that. And we went to many, many meetings and heard a lot of the same things you're hearing from folks today is, how's this going to affect my property? Am I going to be able to do the things I used to do? And unfortunately for them, answers weren't forthcoming before with a stroke of a pen, poof, there was a monument. And we all had to learn later what that was going to mean. This just seems like there should be a more civilized way to approach this. And that's what's so valuable about this bill, I think, is it does offer some level of comfort that people could have their concerns heard, hopefully find some answers, taken seriously by this elected body as a representative of the people of Montana. And you also do have the ability to probably draw some more information from the federal folks who work in this arena and get some more information that might not come into the process otherwise. By passing this bill, I think, as someone mentioned, you do create a check and balance system that doesn't exist today. And for that reason, we urge your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Trink. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Charles Deneau, spelled D-E-N-O-W-H, here on behalf of United Property Owners of Montana. We think that these heritage areas do impact property rights, or at least have the potential to impact property rights. So this is a good measure to ensure that those property rights are protected. So we urge your support.
Thank you. Mr. Hagan, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, Roger Hagan, last name spelled H-A-G-A-N. I'm not representing any organizations. I'm a property and landowner in Cascade County, and I certainly support this bill. I think that it's very important that we get this passed, and I thank Representative Kazmaier for doing this. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Roger. Further proponents, I don't believe there are any in the room. We can go to Zoom. We've got about 10 minutes left for the proponent's side. By no means do we have to use all of that if you choose not to. So, Ms. Van Zandt, Leah Johnson, is that the next one up? Ms. Johnson,
yes,
welcome.
Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Leah Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N. Now, I am here representing the Montana Wool Growers Association. I am the executive secretary. We represent over 350 member families who raise sheep across the state of Montana, and we echo most of what's been stated so far. Wool Grower supports House Bill 554 because we see it as a way to add a layer of protection to private property owners to ensure that their rights are still there and that they have more of a voice in the matter by giving the legislature the power to approve these if areas are, you know, are in favor of them or not. Our membership passed a specific policy in December of 2020 opposing the Big Sky Country National Heritage Area because it was important to our membership. And so, again, Montana Wool Growers is in support of House Bill 555. On a personal note, my husband and I and his family reside in Choteau County, where we farm and ranch. So this is also a personal issue, too, where we are looking at how it could affect our operation, our ranch, and the decisions that we make on a day-to-day basis. So to reiterate, yes, Montana Wool Growers is in full support of 555. We'd like to see it become law to make sure that there is that added layer to protect private property rights. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Further proponents, please. Welcome.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
I'm sorry, I did not know I was queued. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ray Grulkowski, G-R-U-L-K-O-W-S-K-I. My home and rural acreage are in Stockett, Montana, and my husband and I operate our 40-year-old family business in Great Falls. My active relationship with the current NHA proposed in Montana began in July of 2020. My initial concern was my private property being slated for a federal designation without my knowledge or consent. I quickly discovered I was not the only one. I began by writing a letter to my neighboring community private property owners, 1,500 letters, and the groundswell of opposition began. I organized our efforts as best I could and spearheaded the campaign to gain resolutions from local, state, and national groups. Within 3 months, we secured 24 resolutions of non-support. To the many representatives of those groups testifying today, I am grateful. They continued to answer my numerous phone calls. I've put endless miles on my truck, spent thousands of my own dollars, and have uncountable hours invested in spreading awareness to those still uninformed, while actively seeking a white flag from the private corporation pursuing designation. We've met with the private corporation's executive board by our invitation, not theirs. When they realized we wanted to work with them for a resolve without designation, they declined not one, but two of our further invitations. Nor do they respond to our requests of where and when they hold their corporate board meetings. In the face of opposition from Montanans, the private corporation has closed the doors on collaboration with those they wish to represent and pursue the designation. The individuals that desire to represent us essentially won't acknowledge us. How does this serve Montanans who will be impacted? It does not. Our group of residents are consistently pressured to prove how land designations affect private property rights. I do not believe that burden of proof is ours to bear. The burden to prove belongs to those who have hid the plan of an unelected managing entity leveraging other people's money based upon other people's property to benefit their private corporation's wallet, all without the consent or knowledge by the citizen or day-to-day operations, a voice in day-to-day operations. Montanans are intelligent, proud, giving, conscientious stewards of our own private properties. We know a land grab when we see it. We don't have it now, and we don't want it, period. Now, making arguments about whether a national heritage area is beneficial or not to Montanans is not truly why we're here today, although I could engage in that discussion as well. The fact is, none of our opinions or research presentations factor into whether a national heritage area is established. We, the residents, and we, the people, currently have no say. I believe we're here today to establish a component of accountability to the residents, the people, by way of interjecting democracy into a currently heavily undemocratic process. Please make my tireless efforts these past 7 months effective by assisting to correct this idea of designation without representation by supporting Bill 554. Bill 554 will provide a component of accountability for the impacted residents currently being ignored. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. And it looks like Miles Hutton. Welcome, sir. Okay, your microphone's off, but we're not hearing you.
Sorry, how about now?
There we go. Thank you, sir. You've got about three okay. minutes left for the opponents.
Sorry. Chairman Welburn, members of the committee, I'm Miles Hutton from Turner. I'm a rancher, Blaine County Commissioner, and a member of the Montana Natural Resources Coalition. I am in support of HB 554. These national heritage areas seem to be based on the same template as monuments, only supposedly in a more palatable package with economic development, tourism, that kind of stuff. The end result's the same. A withdrawal of use of the land and the inclusion of private property in these things, whether you want your land in it or not. I'm definitely opposed to that. And I ask for your support of HB 554. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't see, I've got someone else on my list, but I don't see them in the queue. Are we completely out of proponents, Heather?
You are correct. That
Thank
was the
you.
End of the line on that one.
Thank you. Okay, opponents, I'm going to reset the clock. Welcome, and you guys have about a half hour to... share your thoughts with us. So welcome, opponents. I don't see any in the room, so let's go to Zoom at the order you bring them in the room, Heather. Mr. Jurgensen, welcome. Senator.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm appearing by Zoom today, and because I'm out of state, and I had written testimony on this topic, and I asked Floor Leader Konauer if she could deliver my written remarks to this group, because I don't have a way to do them by PDF anyhow, which I think is required in the system. But by introduction, my name is Greg Jurgensen. That's spelled J-E-R-G-E-S-O-N, and since 1975. I served 24 years in the Montana Senate and 8 years on the Montana Public Service Commission and in a number of other public service positions appointed, as well as those that I was elected to. So since 1975, or in the last 45 years, I've kind of had a ringside seat to Montana's heritage and history, at least as it unfolded in that period of time. And I served... I served with a number of legislators that probably have had as big an impact on Montana's history and heritage as any group over all those years, and I'm not including myself in that. And some of them are even related to some of the people who are currently serving in the Montana legislature. But let me say, as watched this controversy unfold about the proposal that's primarily centered in Cascade County, though it does extend to other counties along the Missouri River, I've tried to understand the nature and the context of the opposition to such designations and where it comes from, and understand how deeply, clearly people do feel very deeply about it, and where that comes from. So I've considered all that. I Googled what National Heritage and National Historic Trails are, And apparently they were, Congress allowed these kind of designations in legislation they passed back in 1935. And since that time, there have been, out of all 50 states, there have been, out of only 35 states, there have been 58 designations, as I was reading it. And in Montana, there have been no designations of a heritage area, and there have been there's been one designation of one of these National Historic Trails, and that's the Nez Perce Trail. It starts in Oregon, goes across Idaho and Montana and Wyoming, and terminates at the Bear Paw Battlefield south of my hometown of Chinook, Montana. And I was around, and I was in the Senate in 1976 when the 100-year commemoration of the battle was held in the Chinook area and out at the battlefield. And I was in running for the Senate in 1986 when the push was on and the decision was made to designate this National Historic Trail. And I was in the Senate when Congressman Pat Williams secured the congressional approval of 38 sites along this trail being part of the national park system. And so the other day I asked your county commissioner there from Blaine County, I asked his colleague, in all these years since it was first designated, have there been any of the landowners complain that this National Historic Trail, the Nez Perce Trail, has created any problems from them, any undue burdens for them? And he couldn't recall that he's ever had anybody express that there's been a problem with it. I then turned to, because you have cited in the bill, the federal law. So I turned to that. I turned to that and started reading through that. And for the life of me, all it seems to I see in it is that it would allow agencies and individuals who are inside one of these designations to an avenue to apply for federal and private grants to further the purposes of this. And it doesn't give any agencies any kind of, or this group, it doesn't, for sure, it doesn't give them any power of eminent domain or to do any kind of takings. And so I'm just not sure what the objection to. And as I listen to the testimony today, and it's very strongly felt, there's no doubt about it, but I still can't, I'm not sure what I think is going on, is there's a conflation between the grievance that the opponents feel about the Missouri monument designation, and so anything that has any kind of this whole section of federal law has any kind of connection to that is an opportunity for people to air their grievances about something else that may or may not have very strong problems for private landowners. I would finally close by saying, and particularly in respect, the language in the bill I think is kind of problematic. It says any designation as a National Historic Trail or a National Historic or the other designation, any designation that extends beyond the boundaries of the federal land requires legislative approval. Well, as I said, the designation on the Nez Perce Trail has been in place since 1986, and I think you need to put in another section if you're going to pass this law, grandfathering in that designation so there's no question about it. And finally, federal law, the Congress can give authority and powers to state legislatures. It frequently is not the case where legislatures can adopt into themselves powers related to the administration of federal law. So anyhow, I can answer questions later, and sorry about the dog bark in the back.
Thank you, Senator Jurgensen. Next opponent. Mr. Tao.
Hello. My name is Tom Towe, T-O-W-E. I am from Billings, Montana, 2739 Gregory Drive South. I was a member of the state Senate for some 16 years, and it's been a long time since I was, but I did serve with Greg Jurgensen that you just heard from. My concern is very simple. We have a lot of people who have worked really hard on trying to designate the Bozeman Trail. And that's a trail that comes up through Wyoming and comes into Montana. It was a very significant trail for a very short period of time in the 1860s. People have done a lot of research. Mike Penfold has done a lot of research himself, and a number of the Indian community members have also done so. And they're about to present this to Congress for a National Heritage Trail. The Bozeman Trail, I think everybody is familiar with. They know who and what that's all about. I don't want to go into the history of that, but it is very significant as in Montana. And it would maybe cause some real problems if all of a sudden we now have to deal with also getting approval through the state legislature as well. And I think that it's a hard enough thing to do without that. There is a lot of support. We think that that can go through. I speak in particular with Our Montana and a number of other organizations. I think it's an easy fix. The fix is easy. Either drop the heritage trails, leave it for the area. I don't want to get into that argument or that issue at all. But the trails are a lot different. The landowners where a trail goes through, a heritage trail, they're not affected by any way. They can still bar anybody from coming into their property. They can keep out anything they don't want. They have there's nothing whatsoever that will affect that. So I think that the importance of that trail, and many people are very concerned about how important it is, even to their own land, to have a trail go through their ranch or their farm. And I think we could just simply take the trails out. I don't think we have the same issues there. That would be the easiest one. But if that isn't acceptable, do it as a simple exception. Let's accept the Bozeman Trail. That's an important item for the state of Montana. The history of that is important. We don't want to lose. We want to know how that impacted the state of Montana. I thank you very much and be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Towe. Mr. Penfold, welcome. Unmute yourself, sir, please. Welcome, Mr. Penfold. It seems like we're having technical difficulties. Could we bring Mr. Simonson in and maybe we'll get back to Mr. Penfold?
Good afternoon, Chairman Wellborn, members of the Natural Resource Committee. For the record, my name's Steve Simonson, S-I-M-O-N-S-O-N. I live in Billings, and I'm here today to speak in opposition to House Bill 554. I'm testifying as a citizen today and not as my day job as Economic Development Director for a five-county region that I serve in South Central Montana with Beartooth RC&D. My region includes Bighorn, Carbon, Stillwater, Sweetgrass, and Yellowstone counties. And I'm working with a group, as Tom Tao had mentioned, that's seeking to do a feasibility study for the Bozeman Trail that runs through three of the tourism regions, South Central Montana, Southeastern Montana, and Southwestern Montana. There's a total of 9 counties where we all live, work, and play, where the Bozeman Trail goes through. I would like to see the trails portion dropped out of the legislation. I don't have any sort of issue with the National Heritage Area. I feel that private property rights are already protected under the 1968 National Historic Trails Act. For those of you that don't remember all the history of Montana, the Bozeman Trail was established in the 1860s as a shortcut to the gold fields in Virginia City. Nelson Story brought the first cattle herd to Montana on the Bozeman Trail, and it's not the intention of our group to infringe on any private property rights whatsoever. I see the Bozeman Trail project as a way to help diversify the regional economy, bring well-heeled financial heritage tourists to the area, kind of a fleece them and release them program, let them go back home when they're done, but they tend to spend 60% more than the rest of the tourists do, and I think that's an important factor as we look to diversify the local and regional economies throughout South Central and Southeastern Montana. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Simonson. And when you ask if anybody remembered when the Bozeman Trail was brought in, the only one in the room that nodded was Senator Ankeny. So, let's slide back to who did we miss out on the first time? Mr. Penfold, are you back with us? Welcome, sir. Could you send us a smoke signal?
Next.
I don't show any others.
Maybe send in his written testimony.
Mr. Penfold, if you want to just send your written testimony in, we'll make sure that it gets entered into the record. Further opponents to the bill? Seeing none. Informational witnesses?
I have none, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions from our committee? Senator Gillespie.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Mr. Butcher, please.
Commissioner Butcher.
Senator.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Butcher. Okay, you've been involved in this ball game for a long time, and it's right there in your area. I'm sure you're probably in on a lot of the initial conversations, but the county's being left out of this equation altogether. I would think they certainly have the most vested role of anybody. Could you give us your thoughts on that, I guess?
Well, you know, I'm speaking as a Fergus County Commissioner. You know, we stepped into the discussion right away when it was brought to our attention. But I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that I had a little bit of background on heritage areas. So when it popped up, I knew that it might be of concern to our local citizens. So that's why I brought it forth and kind of, you know, alerted the other fellow commissioners around. But as far as, you know, a decision-making capacity, you know, when federal agencies start talking about management plans within a county, you know, local government is a player. They're told to coordinate with local government. And that's kind of what Montana Natural Resource Coalition does, is we assert our position at the table to have a conversation with appropriate management decisions on those federal lands. You know, that's kind of a problem with the heritage areas. That is exactly what this designation is. And so, you know, we're talking at the front end about making the designation versus management afterwards. So I don't know if that exactly answers your question, but as local government, certainly anytime management decisions are made, you know, we endeavor to be at the table and make sure that our citizens know, you know, our concerns, or, you know, that their concerns are known to the federal agencies, and we try to work with them in that fashion. My, you know, part of the reason I think this is a good move to move this a decision to the legislature here in the state is that you really do have a mechanism to vet out the concerns so that there's somebody's not asleep at the switch. And I think sometimes that's what happens. These things come along, and if people aren't paying attention, they get through without a lot of discussion. And I think that's what you're hearing from the folks in Cascade and Choteau County, is they felt like they kind of got blindsided because they didn't know it was happening until it was already mostly done. So, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Hovind.
Mr. Chairman, for the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hovind.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kazmaier, I'm curious why you're putting your trust in the legislature and why you wouldn't put that approval of the county commissioners. The county commissioners are right there where it's happening, and mightn't they be more prone to represent the folks rather than the legislature?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Hovind, that's a great question. In these national heritage areas, they're supposed to get the local support. They're supposed to go to the commissioners, city councils, and get support. They're not getting that, so they're trying to bypass that. So I just think if we get a state law, that actually gives the citizens of Montana an outlet to go to. And state law is a little bit more firm than a county resolution. Does that answer your question, Senator Hovind?
Further questions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Flowers has his hand raised on Zoom.
It's flagging me. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the sponsor.
Representative Kazmaier.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kazmaier, a few of us anyway, just got a copy today of the legal note on this particular piece of legislation. Have you had a chance to review that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, I have, and I have contacted the AG's office about it. And also, I'm bringing an amendment, and I would like to get it amended, that requires state approval before federal designation, and I think that may clear up the legal note.
Senator Flowers, is that follow-up?
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kazmaier, if I can just reference some specific language in here that I'd like to follow up on. It says that, this is on page 2, that a National Historic Trail designation by default only applies only on federal land. Relevant state, local government, or private interests must apply to have those lands included. So my question for you is, if, assuming that's true, and I believe it is because they cite the law in a footnote right below it, that they cite the federal law, which essentially repeats the same thing, given that that designation only applies to federal land in terms of rights, property rights, why would we want to include National Historic Trails in this particular piece of legislation? It doesn't seem to fit.
Mr. Chair, Senator, if it's only encompassing federal land, we have no jurisdiction over that. But if these trails actually try to access through private, that is what we're trying to protect, and state ground that we actually have an interest in.
Mr. Chair, can I follow up, please?
Follow up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kazmaier, and that's exactly my point. What it says in federal statute is National Historic Trails do not take any private property rights, do not take any state or local private property rights. They only apply to property rights on national, on federal land. So that's why I'm confused why we would keep them included in this particular bill, because it's explicit in federal law that these trails only apply to federal land.
Mr. Chair, so just to keep that in there, just in case there's these national heritage ever tried to do a trail, just to make sure we're giving protection to the private landowners. I'm not trying to go over national federal trails.
I guess the only final follow-up I'd have then, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Yes.
We've heard from at least one opponent that they were concerned about the impacts of this proposed legislation on their ability to complete their efforts to establish a National Historic Trail for the Bozeman Trail. And as I understand it, there's been many, many hours of work that's gone into that. Given that trail designation, just like any National Historic Trail, wouldn't affect state, private, local property rights, do you agree that it could be an unnecessary burden on those folks that have put so much time into trying to establish that trail, given that trail has no effect on private property rights, state and local government property rights?
Mr. Chair, I do not believe so. And in my experience, it's easier to get a state designation than a federal. So if they put all the time in the federal designation, it'd be pretty easy to come to the state legislator and we'd probably approve it if it doesn't encompass any private or state ground.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kassmeyer.
Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Butcher, please. I think you guys got a
copy. Senator.
Mr. Butcher, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Butcher, would you please give me a rendition of how you see Montana in relation to commingling of private, state, and federal lands throughout our state?
As far as designations and that interaction, or
well, if you're gonna, we did a trail, a small trail in our community for walking, and it was probably only 3 miles long, and we did eight different property owners and two different government agencies that owned that 3 miles of trail. Before we got done, it was, you know, everybody talks about a trail just being a trail, but how is Montana set up as far as private property, state lands and federal lands, as far as commingle? Do you see a reason that we want that? Do you see a trail just going from one side of the ground or not being on private or state land?
Well, you know, that I guess I'd have to look at the Bozeman Trail, but somehow I question that it's all on federal land. So then the question is that trail then segmented? Is that what they're proposing? I'm not real sure on the trails, but I think to that point, Montana already, I know we deal with that in multiple jurisdictions and different authorities, and you have to get those approvals. It's onerous, it's time-consuming, but it's essential that everybody that has a stake in it has a say in it. And I think that's really where this bill answers that, and saying, you know, that having a private corporate entity put together a proposal that goes straight to D.C. And it only relies on the assumption that entity did its job in vetting the concerns of the local community, leaves us wide open for concern. So I think that's the commingling question, is, you know, what if this, you know, these heritage areas, obviously, but the trails too, probably cross state land. DNRC, what's their input? You know, has it come to the legislature to determine that this is okay? So, you know, there's another public land entity that needs to have its voice heard. And I think that's why, you know, this bill was sponsored, was that concept that you in the legislature here is that kind of that buffer between federal action and the local citizen. And I do believe that because you have, you know, a statewide jurisdiction, that it gives you that ability to really vet the question and say, is it good or bad? Because I don't think any of us are all saying that a trail or a heritage area designation necessarily is bad. It's just saying that it better be vetted out so we know the concerns. And I think that's what we're asking from you. You're elected to represent us as a bulwark between us and the federal government, and I think we're asking you to do that here. And I think it's part of what makes, you know, America what it is that the power is held in the citizens or the state. You know, it's limited to the federal end. And so we're really just saying, we're asking you to assert your authority as state legislators to have the ability to vet out the best interest for the citizens in these areas that are going to be affected by it. And you heard from people that are absolutely affected by the heritage areas. We haven't heard anybody affected by the trails, so I can't speak to that. But I think it's you know, it's okay to have one more level. And if the trail only is on federal land, then this wouldn't affect it. I mean, you can look at it and say, hey, that's, you know, the federal agencies, as long as they do their job, and they actually are to follow through with local government too, by coordinating with local government and assuring that those questions are answered, then I don't see where this should be a problem. You know, if the organization that has put the time in to develop a heritage trail or an area has done their job correctly, and done it well enough that the federal government's going to accept it, then I think it's going to prove up here that you'll be able to prove it. But if they haven't, this is our last chance before something comes down from Washington, D.C., that the folks in Gallatin County may or may not want. We don't know. So I really do think it's important.
Thank you very much, Mr. Butcher. That's all.
Senator Kohenauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is for the sponsor, if I might.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I did give you a copy of the legal note associated with this, and I wanted to go back to that section because I'd like to read it to you and then ask you a question about the bill. It says, in that area where I marked it, enabling legislation for the National Heritage Areas typically contains extensive protections for state and private property owners, and that a National Historic Trail designation by default applies only on federal land. Relevant state, local government, or private interests must apply to have those lands included. Your bill, if we go to page 2 and look at line 4, says that we would want legislative approval of national designations that extend beyond federal land. That would require approval of the legislature. So the way I read these two things together is that if we were to pass this bill, then you would have legislative interference with your private property rights. If you decided or someone decided they wanted to put their land into one of these federal designated areas, they would have to come to us to do that. And so I find that to be an infringement of private property rights. And so I'd like kind of your take on that, because if those national designations are only good for federal land and a private landowner would have to apply, if we put this legislation forward, then a private property owner would then have to come to us to get approval to be included. And I would find that to be antithesis to what you're trying to do.
Mr. Chair, Senator, yeah, I get what you're saying, but I'm a big fan of opt-in. So if you really want that on your private ground and you go contact your local legislator to get opted in, I don't think that's going to be that big of a process, because going to the federal level is a lot harder than going to the state level.
You ready?
Are you sure?
Yes.
Further questions? Seeing none.
Oh. Mr. Chair, I was going to
I thought you were kidding, Senator Gillespie.
I'll be very fair.
By all means, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Krista Lee Evans, maybe.
I thought I heard a closure comment. Mr. Chairman, Gillespie.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Ms. Evans. I was going to ask this to Chuck, but he ducked out. But I'm sure this is in your arena, too. But, you know, we had a couple of opponents on here that made it sound like no big deal. But what pitfalls do you see? I don't know. I think most of us, when we think of CMR and whatnot, we get blurry-eyed real quick and maybe jump to some conclusions. But you have any insight for us?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gillespie, the portion that I'm most familiar with would be the Bozeman Trail piece of this because of my irrigators in the Gallatin. I find it interesting there was an article in December of 2020 where there was quite a bit of discussion about how the Bozeman Trail advocates had had conversations with local legislators, et cetera. And I did touch base with a number of legislators, not all of them, and they were unaware of them, of this proposal. In addition, the Bozeman Trail would cross over one particular legislator's property, private property. And on that note, I did want to make one point in that in the legal note, it states that private interests could ask for private land to be included. That does not require that be the private landowner whose land the trail would cross. And if there's one private landowner here who wants it, there might be one beside it who doesn't, et cetera. So if my understanding is correct, in the area around Great Falls, that is a private corporation that is appealing for that natural heritage area. So I think we need to be careful about assuming that a private interest equates to the private landowners that would be impacted by a trail designation if it were to extend past public land. Thank you.
That would make the bill good.
Senator Brown, by
very,
all means.
Very brief. Let's go with Ms. Evans.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate it, Ms. Evans. With this, if we pass this bill and we get this on the books, do you feel like it would possibly afford us a better day in court, or if it comes down to that, we have this on the that would maybe force some litigation.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brown, I think Mr. Butcher said it best when he said, if the entities who want to have a heritage area or a trail have done their legwork properly and effectively, there should be no problem getting this past the Montana legislature. So, you know, as far as legal action, I hesitate to, you know, guess one way or the other. But truly, if there's truly public support, whether it be a trail or an area, there should be no problem in front of the Montana legislature.
Thank you.
Further questions? Seeing none. Representative Kazmaier, would you like to close on your bill?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee Hearing. Sorry to keep you here so late on a Friday afternoon, but I truly do appreciate it, and all my proponents that drove down here to support me. This bill is trying to provide a way to protect private property rights. Now, if we do this, my vision is the National Heritage are actually going to be forced to go to the locals, get their support, and then the locals will come to the state and get their support. So by the time it reaches the state, I think it will be an easy pass, and then the federal level will be easier. So ask for do concur. Thanks.
Thank you. Senator Kazmaier, have you seeked out a floor sponsor for this, should it make its way through this process?
I haven't, but Senator Lang would be a good one, or whoever wants it.
Senator Lang, it looks like he would be agreeable the way he's shaking his head yes. So, right.
Thank you.
Thank you. This brings to a close House Bill 554 Committee. Thanks for a day of hard work. We will see you back here on Monday. We have, it looks like, three bills for your consideration on Monday. So we'll see you back here then. Travel safe, everyone. Have a good weekend, committee members.
It's good to see you.